It's all over but the shouting. From Fox News Radio, I'm Dana Perino.
And I'm Chris Starwalt.
And this is Perino and Starwalt. I'll tell you what.
Is it all over?
I don't know. Well, yeah, to me. Yep.
So,
what are we talking about?
Lunch. There's a piece I put in the halftime report, and it's by she's a history professor, I believe, at Purdue.
Okay.
It was very interesting, which was, is this like Bill Clinton? Is this like how does this story end? And it just depends on the hearings. Like the Capitol, what happens now, history tells us, is will determine the consequence of this. Look, we know the fact. The fact is that if this came out, well, first of all, if this had come out all at once, if it hadn't been for the drips and drabs and leaks and really impressive reporting that was done over the past 2 years, if this had all come out clean and hit you like a mackerel in the face, this
yes,
would be
– I agree.
A catastrophic event, probably a terminal event for this presidency. And I would take it one step further and say, if this came out on any other president, they would be impeached. But Donald Trump benefits massively from low expectations. People voted for him in 2016. When they voted for him, they didn't think, this is a very honest man. When they voted for him, they didn't say, what a just a good guy, just a nice, a good guy. No, there's a story. Rick Riley wrote a book about how Trump cheats at golf. There's so much focus on Donald Trump that there's a whole book just about how he cheats at golf. But there's a story in there. I think it's from Riley himself. And he says he gets in the cart with Trump to play golf. And Trump points at their competitors. And he says, you see those guys over there? Yeah. They cheat. You see me? I cheat too. And you're going to cheat because you're playing with me and I want to win. And I think that kind of sums up Donald Trump's worldview. And I think it sort of sums up pretty well.
But the Mueller report, the question of the Mueller report was about criminality.
Well, for me, the question of the Mueller report was what did Russia do to try to interfere with our process?
Well,
in
yes,
the
that's absolutely. That is the bottom line. And the attorney general leads with that in his press conference. The report leads with it. That is
it's what matters.
The bottom. And in fact, one thing that got glossed over is that the Russians did get into a precinct's voting machines in Florida.
Yes.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And worse than that. So David Brooks has a very good I've been impressed. There's been a lot of garbage takes out there, but there have been some really thoughtful things written and really thoughtful things said. David Brooks has a very good piece that talks about basically what the Mueller report reveals is that there is a sustained assault on bedrock institutions in the United States, and we're not taking it seriously. Russia, Julian Assange, this stuff is real. And we better pay attention. And we're the threats that we're facing aren't head on. And as he said, because they're coming from the bottom up, we're not noticing them. We're not treating them as we would one that was coming at us head on. That was very good. The other one that I thought was really good, David French wrote a piece that it said the Mueller report should shock our conscience. And it should in a lot of ways. I think it doesn't because, as we were talking about it, it has been dribbed and drabbed out. But boy, when you take it all in one swallow, that's quite a brew. That is quite a brew in there.
I think there is a good point to be made that a lot of it, though, why I felt like it was a little bit underwhelming is that we'd been hearing about lots of this stuff for a long time. It was 3 or 4 weeks ago that Bill Barr's summary came out on that Sunday. Mm-hmm. There, I do think it's strange from a special counsel to basically say, I don't think it was that different from what Comey did to Clinton. Like saying, we're declining to go forward, but boy, this is bad. And
well,
I don't think that's what a special counsel should be doing. I don't know. I have a different take on it, maybe having gone through it with Patrick Fitzgerald.
Andy McCarthy makes a convincing argument on this. And I've read it and, I certainly take his point. I come down at a different place because the president is the president. And what Comey did with Hillary Clinton was only defensible in if you believed, as Comey says he did, that the whole agency, the whole, all of everything was so corrupt, right? He couldn't go to Loretta Lynch. He could go nowhere. He was acting like a whistleblower and that he just had to take matters into his own hands. And that is malarkey, right? He was the head of the FBI. He had a boss and his boss had a boss. And those are the people who were elected or also confirmed by Congress to execute these duties. We have Robert Mueller. We have Rod Rosenstein. We have Barr, all the way up through the executive branch to the attorney general, and then the president who appointed Barr. This is their work product. This is what they came up with. I don't think you can indict a president. Or, how about this? I don't think you ought to. I think it would be bad. So Mueller can't say, yeah, please report to the Albert Perryman U.S. District Courthouse in Washington, D.C., Mr. President, because we're indicting you for obstructing an investigation. That's not going to happen. It wouldn't even be good for the country if it did.
Yeah, there's a lot that is out there, but I think that, you know, people tune into our podcast for lots of reasons, and there's so many different people going all over one by one, line by line of the Mueller report. Mm-hmm. I don't really think that's necessary here because there's so much that happened that I want to get to. It's incredible to me that Notre Dame burned 4 days ago.
I know.
And we didn't even have it top of mind. And you wrote such an amazing piece about that, and I want to get to that. But I think what people would want to know from you is – to now, has the Russia matter ever moved public opinion in one way or another? And number two, how might the campaigns utilize or ignore or try to move on from or use as a weapon the Mueller report?
So one of the biggest things that Donald Trump is going to have to get by in 2020 is corruption. It's not Russia, it's corruption. It's a White House that lies. It's shady dealings. It's that stuff. And Democrats will, if they're smart, exploit that to the hilt. And the degree to which that this report furthers accusations of corruption against this president and this administration, those things will be powerful assets. You can imagine, let's say the Democrats nominate Pete Buttigieg, him standing on stage with Donald Trump and saying, the world knows what kind of guy you are, right? And I'm a good guy. I have clean hands. Running against corruption is a very good way to go. George W. Bush, when George W. Bush ran for president,
restoring
he said, I'm going
to
restore dignity.
Yep.
And everybody knew that they were sick and tired of the Clinton scandals and the Clinton corruption. And so Bush had a good argument to make. I think on the matter of impeachment, the Democrats now running out the clock just a little, like they're there, basically. The election is, what is the election, 16 months away, something like that.
Sooner than you think.
Yeah, exactly. And so for the Democratic leadership, keeping the – once you get within the hot zone, right, and you say, look, we're going to have an election in a year. Let's have the election, right? Because that's really what this comes down to. This matter – Congress will probe. Congress will unredact. There will be leaks. There will be all this stuff. They will continue to go through the process. And by the way, as they should, oversight is a thing. That's fine.
Yep.
Even if I won't ascribe to them motives. So they do have a job to do here, and Mueller should testify. This is a big deal. But as a practical matter, the Democratic leadership, I think, is close enough now that they can beat impeachment fever and say, let's just beat him. Let's not impeach him.
Yep. Yep. And you heard that from Steny Hoyer. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, I was of two minds on this, of what I think would be a good way to move. I shouldn't say move on because I hate that from 1997.
You still have flashbacks.
I do. It's weird. I say it and I'm like, I remember being in the Rayburn House office building and every day I saw Congressman Burton holding a press conference outside and I thought, this is not really why I came to work in Congress, guys. And then I met Peter on an airplane and the rest is history. let me tell you what I think from the 2020 candidate side of things. Because I feel like all of these candidates, they're all bunched into a group, right? Yeah, okay, Bernie, Biden, Buttigieg, like up a little bit. But pretty much they're all like in a group. Is there anyone of them that could figure out a leadership position that breaks away from the pack by saying something along the lines of, got the report. Yep. We all knew he's a bad guy. And the truth is, he's going to be president for the next 2 years, and my intention is to beat him on the merits. I'm going to beat him on policy grounds. I'm going to beat him on the economy, on health care, on freedom, on blah, 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 whatever it might be. Right. And I'm going to beat him in the Electoral College, and I'm going to win, and we're going to take this country back. And can one of these candidates have a moment of leadership like that that breaks away from the pack? I think that would be super interesting.
I don't know of a single Democratic, serious Democratic presidential contender who is pro-impeachment.
Nope.
Is there one?
I don't think so.
I think Beto.
Oh, Beto's for everything.
He's for everything. Isn't it funny how Pete Buttigieg absolutely
just
gutted,
railroaded him?
Just
but wait, can I tell you
Beto
my
O'Rourke.
I want to talk about that, but can I talk about what I think the president should do?
Oh, yeah.
And remember, no one ever listens to me. But this is good advice. There's going to be the calls to investigate the investigation. We know the Inspector General of the DOJ is looking into that. But the president doesn't have to worry about that, right? He has foot soldiers, and they do that work. I think if I were he, I would have a speech in the Rose Garden next Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Congress is out. They're not even in town. He's in Washington. He can hold court and he can say, well, as I said, no obstruction, no collusion. But I'm going to put that aside for a moment. And I'm going to challenge the Democrats to join me in trying to accomplish three things before the August recess. And I'm not asking for the moon. I'm asking for three things that will really make a difference in this country. And we know there are deals to be made on each of these. And I would do prescription drug prices. Even though I hate the policy prescriptions personally, I would do prescription drug prices, asylum law / more resources for the border, and infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And say, can we get this done before the August recess? Let's show America that we can actually govern. And then we can fight it out. But these are at least three things that could make a difference for all of our citizens. And I'm looking for one Democrat. Is there any Democrat who will come to the White House and join me at this table?
How about just one of those things?
I would say three because I like three. And
you're a Dale Earnhardt fan.
Also because I feel like to say we can get one thing done before the August recess sounds very unambitious.
I would only not to be a poo-pooer, because I like where your head's at, and I think you're smart and right about it. But we do remember we have 54 legislative days left before the end of the federal fiscal year, and we are going to go off the fiscal cliff. We are right now, if I had to guess, I would say we're going to have a shutdown, and I would also say that we could have a default situation on the debt ceiling. And we got issues. What makes what you're saying so smart is think about how much easier that one would be if they had already done one thing, right? If they had even on one of those things. So let's say you have the Graham, Lindsey Graham has a bill with Dick Durbin, right, on the DACA people. Put it through. Pass something. Get it done. Get one thing done. Follow the Perino prescription, get something done, and then guess what? Stuff like fiscal cliffs, the dumb stuff, right? Those things get easier because you have people are reminded of how things work. It builds goodwill, all that kind of stuff. You can get to a can-do state by doing something first.
Yep. So, but you know what? The other thing is, as I always try to remember, April of 2019 is not going to look like April of 2020.
No.
And we have no idea what October of 2020 will look like either. So
no.
Anyway, it was an interesting week to say the least. Can I talk about something else that happened?
Yes.
Fox News hosted a town hall on Monday night with Bernie Sanders.
Yep.
And it was lit.
It was so good. And I'm so pleased to be back doing it. And I love our team. It's so good to see that room. And
tell people I could talk about this from the Nashville perspective because we went to Nashville, the five went to Nashville for a day, which was amazing. But people don't realize how much goes into putting something like this together. Like all the people behind the scenes that never are on television and never get to be on a podcast, they work their butts off.
Oh, when you what goes into it? Now, one of the reasons that our town halls and debates are better than other people's, than other networks, is that our production crew, and what's funny, they're not doing it with more resources. It's not like we're spending 10 times more money than everybody else. We just really do it awesome, right? Mm-hmm. We do it up.
The production action.
The production values are lush. I mean, and you could feel watching it. I went back and watched the town hall. I was in the room, and then I went back and watched the town hall, and it just looks so good. And what I find hilarious, which is just it tickles me to no end. Democrats, is it moral to go on Fox News town halls? Should Democrats, they shouldn't have a debate with them. Fox is so bad, blah, 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 blah. So there's all this. And Bernie Sanders is like, I'm taking a lot of heat for doing this. And then 1 second, 1 millisecond after it ended, it was like, oh, wait a minute. They have a huge audience and they have fair questioners in the news division. Oh, right. Duh. Mm-hmm. We should be on
Fox
News.
And then it was like a scramble. Now everybody wants to come on Fox, which great. I'm glad.
And we love them. And we love them all. We take all comers, right? You have to be willing to withstand tough questioning. You have to be willing to not be evasive, or we will come for you. We will come for you. Chris Wallace is lurking somewhere and will come get you if you lie, dissemble, or evade. But man, we do it right and we do it fair. And I'm glad that we have reminded Democrats and the rest of the country that that's the case.
Do you think that Bernie Sanders is the Democratic front runner?
He sure is. And not only is he the front runner, but I would submit, if I had told you this 6 months ago, it would have sounded crazy. But Joe Biden is entering the race substantially to counterbalance Bernie Sanders. Mm. Think about that. Joe Biden's entry into the race
is
defined by Bernie Sanders.
Right. For the
That's wild.
Yeah. And do you think – so Bernie Sanders, we should tell everyone, apparently – excuse me, not Bernie Sanders. Joe Biden is going to announce that he's running for president next Wednesday.
Yep.
So that's like the 23rd, 24th?
Yep.
Hamda's birthday, by the way.
Way
April
to go,
24th.
Hamda.
Everyone wants to give Hamda a shout out for her birthday. She'll be 24 on the 24th.
Oh, nice.
Do you think that that rollout is going to pack a punch? Will it shift the race? Like, what are we going to expect? And do you think that Terry McAuliffe, the former governor of Virginia, decided not to run for president because, as I believe, he's going to join the Biden campaign manager?
Maybe. I would suspect he will
chairman.
Be part of it. Yep.
Chairman. Not manager. I mean, my goodness. Like, please. but chairman.
But yes. I also suspect we do not yet know how the consolidation that's going to take place over the next – so I think we have our first debate. The first Democratic debate is in June. I think it's in late June. The consolidation that's going to take place in the next 2 months is real. Some of it is going to be spurred by the fact that Bernie Sanders is holding on to his piece, right? He's got it. Elizabeth Warren is nowheresville, right? And any others who were trying to – Tulsi Gabbard or whomever was trying to draft in that Bernie space, Bernie still got it, and they love him. And you could hear it in that town hall.
Speaking of that, like when Martha and Brett asked about Medicare for All and there was the cheer, like I think that people truly, like when I was in Nashville, I had a couple of people come up to me and they said, people don't really believe in that, do they? I'm like, no. And because I know for like if you're of that sensibility, like that's insanity. I have a friend I just found out has to have sinus surgery.
Oof.
And needs it, right? The soonest they can get in, you know, this is here in America, is June 21st or something. Mm-hmm. And I said, good thing we don't have socialized medicine because you'd have that surgery next year.
So one of the favorite kinds of polls that are my favorite kinds of polls are when they ask Republicans about Democrats and they ask Democrats about Republicans. Something like when they asked Democrats, I forget who did the poll, and I'm sorry if you did this poll, and I'm not crediting for you. asked how many Republican, what percentage of Republicans do you think earns $250,000 or above? And Democrats said it was like 60% or something crazy, when it's really 3%. When they ask Republicans what percentage of Democrats are gay, it's like, oh yeah, probably 40% of 40% of Democrats are gay. And it's like, no, it's like 1 in 10. Mm-hmm. And the reality is we have such a distorted view of each other in this country because of the rank negative partisanship, the absolutely acidic, the acid bath in which we sit, that has skewed our perception. And moreover, for the things that Democrats really do believe, Bernie Sanders really, really does believe that we will save money in the long run by raising taxes for universal health insurance. He absolutely believes that. And he absolutely believes that the money that you don't pay in premiums and the money that you don't pay in deductibles and copays, that that money will equal out what the new costs are and everybody will benefit. In just the same way, Paul Ryan really believed that cutting taxes would increase federal revenue. He really believed. Democrats said, no, he can't really believe that. No, he really did. And Bernie Sanders really believes this.
At least Paul Ryan was right.
Well, yeah, ish. Ish.
Yeah, ish.
Republicans often overstate the what they call the Laffer curve for Art Laffer.
And we're not laughing.
We ain't. Yes, ma'am.
Not laughing.
Not laughing now.
So you had the Bernie town hall. The next one is Klobuchar?
Yep. I want to make sure I'm only saying things that have already
true.
Been public.
Well, you're working on others.
Well, no, I mean, we've got, there'll be more, I will just say, more TK.
Okay. Why is it TK?
Because in the old days, newspaper terminology, so like the way that you spell lead.
Yeah.
L-E-D-E.
Yeah, why is that?
In newspaper talk. And to come is TK. And there's even an idea that okay came from an intentional misspelling of all correct. And part of it is just jargon. And it's, I guess you'd say it's the argot. We liked it because it was our special code and civilians didn't know about it. But the other part was to avoid confusion with other things. Sort of like why not guilty came to be used the preferred style instead of innocent, because not guilty, I'm sorry, the other way around, that innocent instead of not guilty, because you're not really innocent, right? You're not. They didn't find you innocent. They didn't believe the state's case that you were guilty. But innocent was better because it prevented errors, right? Because if it's, you got the word guilty in there, you could screw it up and somebody could take out the not and you could end up with a big problem, whereas innocent is different. So there's a lot of conventions that related to avoiding error and things like that. And TK, I don't know why TC wasn't better, but TK is what we say.
Well, so we do know that Senator Klobuchar, she'll have her town hall May 8th. That'll be great.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be great.
In Wisconsin.
Very good, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we went, the five took a day and we went to Nashville.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was so fun.
What'd you do? I saw the steak. You showed the world steak.
Yes. Okay, so the reason that we were going in the first place is Jesse Waters and I have been lucky enough to be invited twice now to be celebrity waiters, which I think is funny. I'm like, Jesse, we're really not celebrities. But anyway.
Oh,
well, he thinks
on.
He's a celebrity.
Well, you're not a celebrity, but you're a famous American.
Well, this is the neatest event. I don't know. You know, my sports knowledge is iffy.
Really?
But so Kevin Carter, former Tennessee Titan.
Yep.
He started a charity event every year called Make-A-Wish. I'm sorry. It's called Kevin Carter started Waiting for Wishes. And it's an annual fundraiser for Make-A-Wish Middle Tennessee. So that's the region for Make-A-Wish. And they choose a child that is in going to get a wish granted by Make-A-Wish. And that's the ambassador for the year. And then they have the Palm Restaurant that donates the location. And they sell seats to this dinner. And then the celebrity waiters, we serve the food. And then, but we also like, if we take pictures, we call people, and there's a bucket in the middle of the table. And every time they ask you to do something, they put something else in the bucket. It is a fantastic event.
Oh, fun.
The venue is a little too small for how many people are there, actually. And there's a ton of football players and UFC fighters. Tito Ortiz was there.
Really?
Yeah. And also some country music stars. Little Big Town was there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know them?
Mm-hmm.
You're not a fan. Got it.
No, I didn't say that. Not at all. Hardly.
Also, Charles Esten was there. Do you know who that is?
Don't know Charles Esten.
Charles Esten, OMG. Okay, so first of all, he's an actor, and I believe he was on a soap opera. I can't remember which one. Then he was on Whose Line Is It Anyway? Do you love that show?
God, I love that show.
I love that show. So if you looked him up, you would recognize him. And then, you know, he's a great singer, and he was in that show Nashville that I loved.
Okay.
He was Deacon Claiborne in that, but now he's stayed in Nashville. He's
that
a singer-songwriter.
Deacon Claiborne.
Deacon Claiborne. And so we had a moment where I said, oh, I'm a fan, and he was a fan, and you know, we had a moment. That was great. But anyway, that's the reason we were going. So we went last year. We said, we got to take the 5 next year. So the 5 left. We had the worst flight. Oh my gosh. It was bad. Got there at 1 in the morning, and I was traveling with Donna Brazil, and she's such an easy travel partner. Like nothing rattles her. She's like, that's fine. We'll be there. No problem. We boarded the plane, then we had to get off the plane.
Then,
of course, everyone's like, what's happening? She just walks right up to the pilots and asks them everything. And then she was going around as the ambassador telling everybody what was going on. There was a faulty valve, et cetera. Anyway, we get there. The next morning, early start. And John Rich of Big and Rich picks us up in his open-top, honky-tonk, redneck Riviera bus.
Love it.
And starts driving us around Nashville. We go to Music Row.
Oh, how cool.
He's
such a nice guy.
One of the nicest guys, a patriot, a generous person, and a talented guy. Grew up in Amarillo, Texas. Father was a preacher and made money doing all sorts of other things. He had the best answer about American opportunity and capitalism when he joined us for the 5 that day, too. But a dream came true on that day.
Okay.
I'd had this idea of Greg Gutfeld writes all these hilarious little ditties, little songs. And when we were on the campaign bus in 2016, we were in the back and he kept writing these funny country songs. And I was laughing so much. And I had this idea that the 5 should go to Nashville and we should hook up with a country music artist and record one of these songs about the 5.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, it took 3 years to get it done. And we didn't write a song about the 5. I didn't. Greg wrote a really long song, and then John Rich narrowed it down, and then we recorded it. He recorded it in one take. It's so good. And can I play just a little bit of it for you?
I want it. Yes.
Now, let me just tell you, this song...
Music on, I'll tell you
John
what.
Rich,
this is wild.
John Rich is working on getting it polished and everything so that it can be released as a single. It's called Shut Up About Politics, and the shut up part is Gutfeld, Jesse Waters, Donna Brazil, and me. Ready?
Oh, yeah. Let's hear it. I love it. Some people lie, some people steal. And everybody's talking about the Green New Deal. Shut up.
Okay, so that's it. I won't play the rest. It's 2 minutes and 20 seconds.
That's so great.
It was like one of the best days of my life.
Oh, I really love that.
I had so much fun. Oh, and
Yay.
We all got to scream, shut up. And, you know, my mom didn't let me say shut up when I was a
kid. Oh, no, that was definitely forbidden.
And so the fact that I could yell shut up about politics, it felt so good.
Oh, that is so good.
Oh, it was great. And then we went to the Wild Horse Saloon.
Nice.
Well, first of all, we went to French's and we looked at boots. They sell, and of course, John Rich, he has a line of boots, Redneck Riviera boots that are something else. Then we went to the Wild Horse Saloon. We went to his bar. At his bar, the first drink for any veteran, first responder, firefighter is free.
Nice.
So everybody should know that if you're heading to Nashville. And then we did our show from the Wild Horse Saloon. And then Jesse and I were the waiters at the event. And it was great.
Oh, that's great. So cool. Oh, I'm so happy for you.
That was pretty fun. Nashville. That's do you know
great.
That 100 people a day moved to Nashville? There's a 2.7% unemployment rate.
Well, I was just in Austin. Mm-hmm. And I am here to tell you, those two cities, you can be a victim of your own growth, right? And
definitely.
When I'm in Nashville, I see what's happening with the sprawl and the traffic. I'm like, don't ruin it.
I know.
Don't ruin it.
I know. People are a little bit worried about it. On the flip side, New York, did you see those statistics?
No.
The city loses, I shouldn't say loses. People choose to leave. 103 people leaving the city a day and 113 mm-hmm. leaving the state a day. A mm-hmm. day.
Mm-hmm. Because you know what's happening in America, right? The Northeast is draining people, right? The Northeast, the industrial Midwest, it's all draining, and it's draining south. People are moving to Arizona. People are moving to – you look at where there's growth happening. A lot of it is California, people moving out of California, and that's mm-hmm. why towns like Boise, Idaho is exploding, is growing. It's the fastest growing city in the United States. Mm. Salt Lake City is growing. And Arizona, as
Denver.
You know, has Denver. So the South and the West are growing. And what we're seeing, and this is very hard for Americans to get their heads around, after the next census and the next reapportionment of seats, Florida is going to have, it'll be in third place for most, I think they'll be in third for most, behind Texas and California. And it'll be substantially bigger than New York and, you know, Massachusetts and Ohio, New Jersey. They're shells of themselves, of what they once were. These were once the pillars, and now they're not. And
this is
our
natural,
politics
right?
looks different.
And this happens in American history. People come and go. And actually, Kevin Williamson, he writes a lot about this, that people, you got to move if you want to seek opportunity. And it's hard to move. But now people are who has it? Oh, John Yang, you know, the Democratic candidate. I listened to his interview with Ben Shapiro. And
how was it?
Oh, my God. I think it was excellent. I highly recommend it because it provided a lot of good conversational topics for Peter and me as we were driving back from Bayhead that day. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he recommends is that we should pay, meaning we, the taxpayer, but you got to hear him out. We should pay for the moving costs of people, for people, because that you got to go where the opportunity is. But if you feel stuck, like you're a father and you've got two kids and you can't move the whole family because the moving costs are going to eat up whatever benefit you might have of moving, then you can't, that business can't hire the person, then you can't get there, that it would be a good investment and less expensive in the long run if you pay for the moving expenses. That I think I'm articulating his point. I think.
I see.
Anyway, but he's got a lot of ideas.
He's got a lot. He's got a lot of ideas. That is true. And his idea.
Also, I didn't know. Gottfeld told me he's against circumcision. I was like, whoa, okay. I don't
what?
Know. I haven't really ever delved
like,
into that.
By
topic.
Law?
Yeah.
By law?
Uh-huh.
He wants to ban that?
I guess.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. Hey, can we spend just a couple of moments before we go to questions about the devastating fire of Notre Dame and what you wrote about in Halftime Report in the aftermath?
Well, I guess I would say Twitter can be great. Mark Hemingway reminded me, Mark Hemingway, who works at the Examiner now, I think. I think that's right. Used to be at the Weekly Standard. Mark is a great writer and a great reporter. Heminator on Twitter. And Mark reminded me of something. Did you ever watch Kenneth Clark's Civilization series?
Nope.
So
how about last night when you asked me if I watched Vice?
I asked Dana Perino.
Let's just remember what time it was.
It was like 9 o'clock.
It was 9 o'clock. I'm just finishing Tucker. I've been on air since 11 AM.
And I wanted to see Vice because I wanted to see, and this is the movie about Richard B. Cheney, and I wanted to see the portrayals. I knew that the movie would be opinionated, and I knew that the movie was not going to give a fair treatment, but I did want to see the portrayals and how they did stuff. And in that way, Christian Bale does an amazingly good job of playing Dick Cheney. Like, you forget that it's
Christian
Bale. But I love
Dick Cheney, so I don't think...
Right. Mm. But I say to Dana Perino, I say, what did you think of Vice?
Or said, did you see Vice?
Yes, did you see... Have you seen Vice?
And yes. No, he didn't say... He said, did you see Vice? And I'm like, what time... When could I possibly watch Vice? And I thought he meant the news... show
the new right the news channel the Vice News, and so we're talking past each other, and I thought how funny, how disappointing probably it would be to the filmmakers that key figures in the Bush administration didn't even recall that the movie existed. So that would probably be disappointing. But Kenneth Clark was the curator of the British Museum, and he helped stand up the BBC. And then the BBC basically said, we would like you to continue to help us make movies. And he did. And in 1969, he made a series called Civilization. Now, he's an art historian. He was an art historian by trade. And he's so perfectly British, it's just amazing. His Britishness is perfect. It could not be exceeded. And Sir Kenneth makes the case about if you want to take the measure of a society, if you want to take the measure of a people, look at their art. Because when you look at their art, they're not lying, right? The art is a truer reflection. A chronicler or a historian is subjective. When you read Ron Chernow's book about Alexander Hamilton, you have Ron Chernow's point of view about Alexander Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. Ron Chernow is a smart person and he is a good biographer, but you're getting his take of it. When you look at a civilization's art, when you look at a society's art, it tells you what they value, what's important to them, all those things. And it's hard for Americans to understand this, to think in terms like this. But from the year about, let's say, you pick a time, but from the 5th century until about the 9th century, the light went out. People forgot how to read. That's not good. And if it hadn't been for some Irish monks scribbling and scribbling and scribbling, knowing that the Vikings were going to come anyway and steal their beer and cheese and kill some of them, but they knew that the raiders would come, and still they kept language alive. Still they remained literate. But the whole world, the Western world, forgot how to read. Charlemagne, the great king, right? The Frankish king who started the restoration of order, totally illiterate. And so were most people. It wouldn't have occurred to people to know how. And from that little ember there off the coast of Ireland came back civilization. And when you look at, and it's not just Notre Dame, but if you look at Chartres, if you look at, if you go to Aix-la-Chapelle, to where the Frankish king sat, and you look at what they built, and you look at what they did in the Romanesque period, and you look at what they did in the Gothic period when they built Notre Dame, you look at all of that, it's amazing. They were all built to the glory of God, and yes, they were all built to show how powerful and rich the people were, but they were also just a bold statement, a daring statement in the face of darkness to make beauty, right?
Yeah.
To finally say that I am not afraid of the dark anymore. And mm-hmm. art and creativity and creation.
Yeah.
Is,
and math and science, like, really incredible, especially if you think about astronomy.
Yeah. And my point about Notre Dame is this. What made Notre Dame possible is civilization. Civilization made Notre Dame possible. And civilization is always closer to the edge than we are comfortable in thinking about.
Mm.
And it is up to each one of us mm-hmm. human beings in our little corner of the world mm-hmm. to prop it up and
it
do our
part. It
is
pretty amazing that it lasted that long and didn't burn before.
That is true.
Incredible to me that it was 800 years?
Yeah.
Amazing.
And the roof.
Think of how many things had burned. You know, Crystal Palace, Hampton mm-hmm. Court. I'm mm-hmm. just thinking of course, I'm an Anglophile, and so I love all that. Fire is the enemy of old wooden buildings.
Old wooden buildings, that's right. But how good of a job did those stonemasons do
mm-hmm.
in building so mm-hmm. that consuming fire to burn all that wood that had been there since the 13th century a forest worth of trees burning inside a hot big fire.
And it stayed.
And it
also
stayed.
That they were, and the rose window doesn't melt. And then you had the human chain to protect the relics. Quite incredible. Quite incredible.
Pretty cool.
Gosh, we could, we're flying through this. I do,
well, it's kind of a big
I do
week.
Feel like we need to have a moment to say happy birthday to Tora, my sister's diabetic cat, is 16 today.
That's so old.
Well,
how old is that in people years?
I don't know what a cat.
Because a dog's 7 years, right?
Well, the first year is one, and then every year after that is seven. So, like, Jasper is now 43.
Looking good. Tora, like, I would say, I see Tora basically, if when I think of Tora as a person, it's Wilford Brimley. So.
Oh, so they just told me it's 80 years.
Tora is 80?
Yeah.
Brimley.
Pretty good for 80.
Yeah, pretty good for 80.
So
getting around.
Let's do a few questions from the internet.
Oh, I before you do that, very quickly, the meat episode.
Oh.
I get back from the road. I'm like, ugh. Like tired. I'm like, ugh. And I go in and there is a box waiting for me. I'm like, did I order something from Amazon? I can't remember. And I open it up and it's gorgeous meat. I mean, beautiful meat. It's ham, bacon, sausage, breakfast sausage, loose sausage. I'm like, I dine on swine and this stuff looks really, really good. And I'm like, who gave this to me? And I finally turned to Twitter and I loved your response. Your response, you like, OMG, it me. You gave it to me. I am so excited because Easter will feature some of the spoils, but thank you so much.
You're welcome.
A wonderful thing to come home to.
You're welcome.
To.
Happy Easter.
Thank you.
A good friend of mine is a supporter, investor of PorterRoad.com. PorterRoad.com.
And they're out of Kentucky, right?
Oh, boy. I don't know.
I think so.
I should know that. But
they're great.
You can do like one of these packages where it's just like a one-off thing as a gift or like for yourself, I guess. Or you could do a subscription, right?
So meat that
you
subscription.
Have, yeah, meat subscription. The only thing for me is that you have to cook it. So I'm like, forget that.
Yeah, that's out. There's no way. But I will cook it and I will report back. Oh, and the other thing is, are you granting us an extension on the book club?
Oh, yeah, because we all need one of those. So next week we were going to do Accidental Presidents by Jared Cohen, but we can push it. How much
Let's
time
push
you
it.
Want?
Just another week.
Just another week. And look, if you don't read the whole thing, it's okay. Just read a couple of chapters and that'll be enough to get us through to have a book club.
Yep. I told people were writing and people were concerned and writing into the halftime report. And I said,
oh, no, don't worry.
That I would take it to the professor to get Professor Perino would give us a 1 week extension.
Oh, I'm easy. I'm the easiest professor. So I've got some questions here. And I feel like since we don't have that much time.
Yep.
There's so many people want non-Mueller, non-politics. So
we're
going to drive through these as quickly as possible.
Okay.
Paul Shackelford, what is the perfect Easter meal, lamb or beef?
Lamb.
As a fellow baseball fan and everyone's sick of politics, this is from Jason Chow. Who does Chris think are the top five pitchers of his youth? My gosh, could you even name five?
Sure. Doc Gooden. What's his name? Pitch for the Red Sox. Roger Clemens. What's his name? The strikeout king. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm not saying his name. The greatest strikeout artist, greatest fastball, Nolan Ryan. I got to throw a Cardinal in. I got to go with Suter. And, what's his name for the Braves? What was his name? Played for the Cubs. Was it John Smoltz? There was Smoltz and another one. You did pretty well.
There
you
go.
There's five.
Robbie Spatt says, my question is, have you ever sung karaoke music?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, not only have I sung karaoke music, my buddy Mark Adkins and I have a pretty respectable Purple Rain.
Wow. Okay. That challenge accepted. We're going to see this. We'll see this on the road during the election cycle. Alan Rutner asks, as a seasoned traveler, what is your favorite travel or gadget? I'm sorry. Favorite travel gadget or accessory that if you lost, you would immediately replace?
External battery.
Mm-hmm. Key.
Gotta have
the extra thing.
Gotta have it.
Okay. Tina Henrik Burrows asks, do you eat the bunny ears or bunny butt first? Asking for a friend.
I find a chocolate bunny to be a waste of my time.
Whoa.
Now, there are some that are good. The Bissinger's company makes wonderful candy, but mostly that's waxy chocolate. And I don't like chocolate enough to eat bad chocolate. On Easter, I'm going to be focused on fruity sugar. I'll be hanging out with some Starbursts, some good jelly beans, not the gross, gritty jelly beans, please, but small Jelly Belly jelly beans, some Swedish Fish. Swedish Fish does Easter candy. So I'll be over on that side. But when it comes to chocolate, waxy bunny chocolate, I'm a no.
D.S., Mule Cantor asks, why do people on TV say at the end of the day 58 or more times during a single interview? That's a banned phrase on The Five, by the way.
It should be a banned phrase. You know what's hard? What's hard is denying yourself the little moments. So I say, I say that because I'm giving my brain a second to engage, right? I'm trying to figure it out. So people salt their speech with lazy jargon like that. Have you ever read, look, I just did it, George Orwell's essay on political language?
No.
I recommend it to all humans, particularly all American humans in this day and age. And it's about the concision of writing. I was talking about this with David Glade, the rector at my church, about this. And we were talking about how imprecise, lazy, sloppy language hurts us in the long run. So at the end of the day, you should get rid of at the end of the day.
You really should. You really, really should. I think that's a good way to end the questions.
There you go.
I have to be honest. I didn't look at the trivia yet.
It's probably awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it's Easter related.
It's not.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I'll give you the special counsel, independent counsel, special prosecutor, and you give me the investigation.
Okay.
Number one, John Danforth.
This is great.
I didn't know that. I forgot
What would
that.
John Danforth – so that would have either had to have been before or that would have either had to be after. John Danforth, probably after. I don't know. John Danforth. How about he was special counsel on – I don't know. Tell me.
Waco Siege. That's pretty interesting, right?
It was before, yeah. He was a very impressive. He quite a public servant.
Okay, next one. Number two, Archibald Cox.
Watergate.
Number three, Patrick Fitzgerald.
Bunch of stuff. Scooter Libby.
It's the Valerie Plame affair.
Valerie
Did you know
Plum.
That she's going to possibly primary Lujan out in New Mexico for that Senate seat on the Democratic side?
It sounds
Did
about
you know
right.
that?
It sounds about right. I didn't know it, but I would say stands to reason.
Do you think she has a chance?
I don't know why she would.
Okay, that's a good answer.
Does she, I guess, think he's insufficiently liberal?
I have no idea.
I don't know. That's weird. But anyway.
Okay. Number four, Atlee Pomerene and Owen Roberts. The name like Atlee, you got to figure out the time. Go back.
Yeah.
Like when was that?
Teapot Dome?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Do you know, by the way, and you as a Wyomingan would be aware of this, that the regulations related, the law related to the Congress's ability to get the president's taxes comes from Teapot Dome?
No, I didn't know that.
Because the corruption in the Harding administration was so wild.
Oh, no, I read that in American Accidental Presidents.
It is in Accidental Presidents.
Oh, yeah.
And his depiction of the bawdy, raucous, crooked, filthy life that the Harding gang was living in a house on H Street in Washington back in the day is something. It'll curl your hair.
Yeah, I like straight hair. I mean, for myself. Number five, Robert Ray.
Whitewater.
You did pretty good. You did pretty well. Yeah, did pretty.
I missed one that I should have gotten, and I regret the error.
Well, but people sort of forget about the Waco siege.
No, it was a big deal. Waco, and it was concurrent with Ruby Ridge. And this was like the. And by the way, you know.
Do you know that book Educated?
Mm-mm.
By Tara Westover. It's been on the bestseller list for like 3 years. It's a nonfiction autobiography about her life growing up in Idaho with a abusive father.
Whoa.
In a sort of a
survivally.
Mormonism, but kind of like way
prepper.
Off.
Prepper.
Yes, yeah. Yes. But his whole thing, what got him initially kind of crazed about the government was Ruby Ridge.
Well, and you know what? Today is the 24th anniversary of
Timothy McVeigh blowing
up Oklahoma
City Murrow Building
killed 250 people.
Right, and where were you on that day? Do you remember?
24 years ago. I think I was in college 24 years
ago.
Yeah,
so I was in graduate school at University of Illinois, and I was sick. I had like the flu or something. I'd stayed home and was watching the news, of course, in my little attic apartment there in Springfield, Illinois.
Good living.
Watched all. Do you know that when I went through my FBI background check way back when in 2001, mm-hmm. you have to list all the places you've lived in the last 15 years or something like that. And that's mm-hmm. hard when you
that
were
is hard.
Like a college student and then a waitress and you're like moving around and doing all these things.
Lived here for 3 months, one summer.
I don't know if I ever figured out the address of where I lived in Illinois. I'm trying to remember. I must have because I got approved. But it was such a fast year. I don't hardly remember any of it. But I remember specifically where I was that day because I had a little love seat and there was wood paneling, fake wood paneling in this
nice.
Attic, and my little TV was there, and it was like really low ceilings, which didn't matter because I was fine. And on the windowsill was a little dove's nest, and I watched those chicks hatch.
Oh,
what a nice little memory!
That's such a nice little thing.
Nice memory,
a hopeful thing, and that was a scary time.
Mm-hmm. Do you know that mm-hmm. my mom had, years later, she ran Lutheran Family Services in Denver when the trial was held in Denver, right? Because they had to take it out of Oklahoma. And she did all the volunteer work. I'm sorry. My mom organized all of the volunteers to help the families that had come for the trial. So mm-hmm. in the mornings, they would get up super early, like at 4 o'clock in the morning, meet at that little church that's there under that building in Denver. Mm-hmm. And first of all, they would stand in line for those families so that they didn't have to stand in line for hours.
Yeah.
And then they'd switch out, you know, like how they do on Capitol Hill for like a.
Oh, that's so great.
And then all of those volunteers got back to the church and then made sack lunches for everybody for weeks.
What, you know, Fred Rogers, a guy who we now rightly understand as a theologian and a philosopher, not just the host of a children's television show. Fred Rogers said, when bad things happen, look for the helpers.
Yes. Yep. All right. Well, that was good. Look for the helper on Easter weekend.
And I was going to say, I wish you a blessed Good Friday. I'm looking forward to
It's also service. Passover on the same day.
I know we're synced up,
I look forward
to services tonight, and I wish you such a happy, blessed Easter. I hope you guys have a wonderful time.
Indeed, and you too. You too.
Thank you.
All right, for more podcasts, go to foxnewspodcast.com. Don't forget, subscribe to this one on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, and leave us a review. This has been Perino and Starwell. I'll tell you what on Fox News Radio.